talk some Titans and more. But right now, going back to the hotline, our good friend Alan Bell with CBS Sportsline. Alan, hope you had a wonderful weekend, and as always, welcome back to the show.
Hey, appreciate you having me, buddy. Thank you so much.
You know, I got into this. I saw Colin Cowherd post and got into this conversation, and as soon as I saw it, it kind of reminded me of what the Titans went through last offseason with Marcus Mariota. Ryan Tannehill joins the Titans. Because it was one of these things where you start looking at Baker Mayfield and what has he done, or better yet, not done, as far as being the quote-unquote franchise quarterback for the Browns, and looking at the new addition with Case Keenum, and you can certainly see where, you know, look, the Browns were supposed to have been that team in 2019. They got, you know, they were picked one of the five teams out there to make a nice run for the Super Bowl, all this hype. And immediately out of the gates, they laid an egg against the Titans. So I bring it up because could Baker Mayfield become the Marcus Mariota of 2020?
I mean, it's possible. Let me say this. I mean, you know, when you bring in a new head coach that did not draft Baker Mayfield, I mean, the coach has no obligation to Baker Mayfield. His obligation is to win. And to be honest with you, fans want to win, especially that franchise and that fan base, right? So they don't care how you do it. So if it's, you know, if it's Baker Mayfield, if it's Case Keenum, they just want to win. So, I mean, Baker Mayfield knows what the game is after last year's disaster of a season. And quite frankly, how much money they put into this roster and how good that defense is, he has to show up. So I'm with you. I mean, there's certainly a chance and an opportunity that that could happen because, you know, as we say, I mean, the new coaching staff does not owe anything to Baker Mayfield. Baker has to prove it to them, not the other way around.
I mean, it would be one thing if you see somebody working hard and trying to make a difference week in and week out, but when you, the bottom line is, it's all about perception and whether it's right or wrong, but I guarantee you the perception of some of the fans of the Browns are thinking, the team is not winning, and all we're seeing is Baker Mayfield doing all these commercials.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, look back last year, right, at the Marcus Mariota situation. Marcus Mariota didn't do anything that Baker Mayfield had been doing in terms of commercials, in terms of, you know, yelling at other players, you know, on the field. I mean, just, you know, acting like that. Marcus Mariota was the absolute epitome of everything that you would want out of a leader. And even he couldn't keep the job, right? Like, it's all about what you're going to do. So if Baker Mayfield is not bringing it on the field, I mean, that experiment could go south very quickly because, again, you know, as a new head coach, you know, he understands that time is quick in the NFL and you don't have a whole lot of it. The Browns just got done firing a coach after one season, right? Like, they're not putting up with anything. So he's not going to care one way or the other about Baker Mayfield's feelings, about what he thinks. It's win or move on. And you know, Baker's going to have to know that, and I think that he does. And it's not all on him. You know, there's a locker room that needs to be fixed, per se. But when you're the quarterback, you know, sorry, man. Like, you get all the praise when good things happen. You're going to catch it negatively on the other side as well.
I mean, it'd be different if we're talking about getting drafted where Russell Wilson was drafted and making third-round money. Well, that's not the case with Baker Mayfield. And it's one of these things, he will be paid well if he's successful. There's no doubt about it. And he's already being paid well because of where he was drafted. And this, you know, look, I don't blame fans. If you're a fan of the Browns and you're thinking, if that time that was being used to make the commercials and all of that was used to maybe look at opponents, look at more film, look at the, if it was done in the off season, look at, you know, what those particular teams did in the prior year. It's not fair. I understand that. But at the same time, you know, life's not fair. And if you're drafted and you're the franchise quarterback, then you better win, or, you know, there's always somebody there willing to take your job.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why the NFL succeeds, because there is someone always there, you know, willing to take that job. And, you know, Baker Mayfield, here's the thing about him, is that, you know, he's out of excuses. There's no excuse anymore. You've been given Odell Beckham. You've been given Jarvis Landry. You've been given Nick Chubb. You've been given Myles Garrett. You've been given so many players. Like, this team, if you look at the Browns roster, it is stacked with talent and young talent everywhere, with guys that can win. but he's going to have to put this thing together. And let me say this. I know that, you know, people hate on Tom Brady, and people hate, you know, in terms of, you know, what he's done, you know, possibly, I don't know. But Tom Brady puts the work in. These guys that win NFL games, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, keep going down the list. Like, these guys are relentless workers, like quarterbacks that just do nothing but work and learn and earn. Like, that's what they do. That's why these guys win. And Baker Mayfield, I'm not saying that he's not putting in the effort or putting in the work, but, I mean, there's a reason why people succeed, and he's going to have to do this because he's been given every single opportunity to do it. They're really going to have to put up this year. They absolutely have to, because I'm with you. If they don't, and especially if they come out of the gate early and just look horrid on offense, yank him.
Is Case Keenum good enough to lead the Browns to a Super Bowl?
Case Keenum is good enough not to turn the ball over. I'll tell you that.
See, and, good point. The stats don't lie after all these years. The stats don't lie about that.
Yeah, I mean, Case Keenum, you know, Case Keenum can be a guy like what Ryan Tannehill did last year. And I'm not going to say that, you know, he's going to have that great of a year, you know, if he does play. But let me say this. Ryan Tannehill understood, you know, the game of football with the talent that he had around him, how to work with receivers, how to use the run game, how to use the offensive line. Like, Case Keenum is veteran enough that he knows that he can, you know, kind of leverage himself throughout the entire team and the talent that's on there, you know, to win. Is it good enough? That's the AFC North's going to be pretty tough. Pittsburgh's going to be good again, too, on top of Baltimore. But again, man, I mean, you know, Case Keenum's won before this week.
There's two players, as far as from a franchise tag standpoint. First of all, Dak Prescott has yet to sign his with the Cowboys. And, you know, with the fact that Andy Dalton is there, I wonder if there's incentive there for the Cowboys to rush ahead and sign Dak Prescott to an extended contract. And then the other one, of course, we keep wondering about Derrick Henry. Will he get a long-term contract before the, you know, July 15th date comes up?
Yeah, I mean, two good questions. I mean, first on Derrick Henry, I think that he will, you know, just based on this team and the way that the offense is built. I don't think that John Robinson and Mike Vrabel are going to go crazy in terms of a number, but I don't think Derrick Henry is going to push them for every single penny possible. I think that they'll find a good kind of symbiotic balance in the middle. As for Dak Prescott, I mean, this situation has shown, you know, the Cowboys want him to sign a 5-year deal. Dak wants to sign a 4-year deal. Makes sense for the quarterback. Get yourself sooner, you know, to that, you know, next contract. If he's going to sign a 5th year, he's made it clear that he wants a very hefty price, you know, in terms to do that and, you know, kind of a good faith type thing. But the Cowboys have shown that they are not, they're just not going to, you know, fully extend themselves beyond what they want to do. So I don't know, you know, when they're going to get this thing done, because, you know, what it comes down to is there's a line drawn in the sand right now. And one of those sides, either Jerry Jones or Dak Prescott, is going to have to go over that line. And I don't know which one is going to do it.
Well, you think about the impact it could have inside that locker room. You know, for me, I think with that, the Titans, to me, would be the team most affected, because there, I'm sure there's feelings inside that locker room that because of Derrick Henry, you start seeing other individuals getting paid. I don't necessarily believe that the Cowboys' locker room would have that same feeling about Dak Prescott.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating looking at it from that aspect, right? Like, you know, if they don't pay Derrick Henry, you know, you look at, you know, players that, you know, I think what, Adoree Jackson is going to get paid more, you know, in terms of his 5th-year deal, you know, next year. I mean, I think Derrick Henry is such a large catalyst of this team, and he really is the workhorse leader. And, you know, it's a bad precedent, you know, internally when guys that are kind of your homegrown stars, you know, don't get the money that they feel that they deserve, and other players, quite frankly, feel that they deserve. It sets a bad precedent. It gets inside your locker room. It gets inside free agency. Players know this stuff. They don't want to sign with you. So it's a fascinating, you know, aspect on both sides of it. You know, the Cowboys are interesting because you've already paid Zeke a big amount of money. You just paid Amari Cooper a big amount of money. They're talking about wanting to trade for Jamal Adams, even though I don't think that they're going to get that thing done. But it just goes to show that a lot of other people are getting money. Why isn't Dak Prescott getting his money? That locker room aspect, I don't know 100% on each team, but I find it fascinating because that's really where NFL teams, you know, succeed or fail is how your locker room, you know, comes together as a team or not.
Alan Bell with CBS Sportsline joining. By the way, the whole Jamal Adams thing. What is wrong with the Jets? I know we brought this is just to me another version, chapter 385 of what's wrong with the Jets. Is there something going on behind the scenes that we are unaware of?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting because it's been fascinating with him specifically, Jamal Adams, you know, for the last 2 years. And, you know, we look at, you know, the team, you know, supposedly, you know, not wanting to pay him, the team signing Le'Veon Bell, and then Adam Gase doesn't want Le'Veon Bell. I mean, I don't know what's going on, you know, internally in that organization, but it doesn't seem great, you know what I mean? Because, again, I mean, Jamal Adams has become every single thing that you would want, you know, out of a player, and I don't know, man. It's tough, but that's another thing that, you know, can kill rosters, can kill a locker room, you know, when there's no morale and the guys who really are your leaders on the field, when they turn negative against the team, other players turn negative. It's like any other company, any other office. When your star person that everyone loves turns negative on the boss, well, a lot of the other employees start to turn negative on the boss. It's not good. I'm not going to say it's a mess just yet, but it's been a mess with Jamal Adams the last 2 years.
By the way, you know, last week we get the news as far as the NFL wanting to maybe make a change as far as with the onside kick. And basically a team would have two opportunities a game if they want to pull this off, where they would have a 4th and 15 from their own 25-yard line if this gets approved. Now, they can't keep on doing it if they're down by, you know, 6 touchdowns and they get lucky and score 1 and score 2. They can only do it twice, so it's not an ongoing thing. I like the proposal, honestly. And there's a couple things in play here. They're trying to, because they understand the health risk with onside kicks, they've already made changes previously with onside kicks, and now they see this as yet another opportunity to serve two purposes: make the game a little bit more exciting, at the same time continue to decrease the risk as far as the players getting hurt.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, usually on something that's kind of so different, you know, to the normal, you know, set of rules for football, everyone would kind of be up in arms, but no one really is. And you know, I like the idea. It's creative. It seems fun. And you're right. I mean, it's all about safety. Onside kick, you know, for a long time, you know, has been just a very dangerous type play. And to be honest with you, I think that this is also a big step in the NFL eventually eliminating kickoffs as a whole. You know, this is kind of the first start of that. Not that they're going to do that anytime soon, but I would not be surprised if 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you know, when we're looking at the next, you know, collective bargaining agreement type time, you know, frame, that we're talking about eliminating the kickoff as a whole. So the NFL owners are voting tomorrow on that. So we should know tomorrow if this thing is going to be, you know, in the rule books for 2020.
If I had my wish, I wish there was a football czar with a committee and to try to get everybody, high school, college, NFL, all on the same page with certain things, whether it's onside kick, overtimes. Like, you know, to me, I think college football has a better idea of what overtime should look like, but I don't necessarily totally agree with it. And this is where maybe down the road where the NFL, college football, they get together, adapt more of what college football is doing. But look, I've never liked the idea that you're already in scoring position in college football in overtime. You're got the ball 1st and 10 at the 25. Let's make it where you have to make at least one first down. Make it 1st and 10 from the 40, for example. But I've never liked the idea in college football that you're already in scoring position. And I would love to see that variation be adopted as far as in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of surprised that the NFL hasn't done more, you know, with their overtime. I mean, I totally get, you know, the way that they have it now in terms of wanting to keep it real football. I certainly understand that. But, you know, the college model does produce more excitement. It produces more scoring. And I like your idea as well, you know, of having to, you know, get yourself, you know, in the red zone, you know, before just having the ball set there, you know, put it at the 40, put it at the 50. You know what I mean? Like, I would certainly be all right with that. And then two, you know, what you talk about in terms of like a football czar, you know, kind of just aligning, you know, really the high school level to college to the NFL. If the NFL passes this new onside kick rule, I would imagine that this thing is going to get adopted pretty quickly, at least at the college level. I don't know about high school, but again, I don't know how many, you know, onside kicks are really happening. You know, at the high school level, you know, you might have some at the very top echelon schools. But, you know, this is such a game changer in terms of the style of play that I would be surprised if college doesn't pick it up, you know, in the next 2-3 years.
I know you and, of course, Sportsline covers a lot of different things. And, you know, one of the things that right now we're trying to find ways to get everybody back up and running as far as these sports leagues, you know, especially from a professional standpoint. You know, if I'm the NFL, if I'm college football, I'm watching and realizing nobody is on the same page. Even in college football, nobody's on the same page. And to me, that is still a major concern of mine, that everybody is looking at this from, you know, the facts are still the same that people are trying to get information from, but the target just keeps moving. And there's nothing to me that shows any signs of similarities at all.
No, there's not, you know, and that's the hard part is that, you know, this thing is kind of broken down by state, right? So you've got 50 different states that have 50 different ideas. 50 different states that have different situations. You know, New York is not the same as Tennessee, is not the same as California, is not the same as Texas. So it's really, really difficult. And it's going to be hard, you know, to kind of put this thing all together collectively, which, let's also be honest, you know, these decisions are not going to be made by the front office. They're going to be made by the legal office. You're going to be looking at, you know, companies and leagues and teams that are looking out for, you know, lawsuits, you know, down the road. You know, on top of safety, on top of health. I mean, this is such a layered situation that it's going to be really hard. And college football is going to have the most difficult road because these are, you know, not professionals. They're not paid. They are students. They are kids. It's going to be really, really tough. And these are schools that are tied to governments, right? So, I mean, you know, you have one bad situation at, say, Tennessee. Well, that's the state of Tennessee school. And, you know, the state could end up being sued. I mean, there's so many layers to this thing, and we're just getting into the start of it. I mean, this thing could last, you know, for a while. So, I don't know the answer. And like you said, I don't think anyone does right now.
Well, you're already seeing things being thrown out there that this could be really pushing, say, for example, in college football, which is the feeder to the NFL. You could see where the Power Five conferences, along with Notre Dame, they decide, you know, heck with the NCAA. We don't care about the FCS teams and those programs. We don't care about the group of five. We're just going to do our own thing. And to me, if that happens, you wonder the direct effect and impact it would have on those other college programs. We know how much football, I mean, look, the numbers are out there. I think college football, if not played in the 2021 school year, you're talking about a loss of $4 billion that's not coming back. And so it's not like you're going to be able to, it's not like you're going to be able to make it up down the road per se. But if you think about the haves and the have nots and you see that happen, you know, you wonder how that will impact college football as far as with the rest of those programs.
You know, you bring up an interesting point in terms of, you know, say, the SEC plays and the Pac-12 doesn't play. You know, we'll just use that as an example. You know, the SEC is already, you know, far ahead in terms of revenue driven, you know, recruiting. I mean, everything like that. What would happen? You're right. I mean, what would happen if, you know, UCLA doesn't have a football program this year, but Alabama does? You know what I mean? What Tennessee does, USC doesn't. I mean, you know, you've got programs that are going to just take a monster leap ahead. What happens to existing players? You know, at say USC, that say if USC doesn't have a season, well, they're starting quarterback. What is he going to do? Does he have to just sit out? Can he transfer? Can he go somewhere else? I mean, there are so many, you know, issues that arise, you know, across the board with this, that if they're not all on the same page, which it doesn't sound that they are, I mean, you could have just all kinds of upheaval on every, you know, single tree, you know, branch on the tree. It could be crazy.
And if it gets delayed, say the season gets delayed until January, February, then some of these programs are going to be seeing some of their student athletes decide, well, I've got an NFL career ahead of me. I know I'm going to be drafted high, first, second round, per se. Why do I want to risk it, you know, playing college football this close to a NFL season in 21, for example?
Oh, absolutely. Anybody that's a first-round pick considered already, you would have to at least think about it. You know, if you're Trevor Lawrence, right, and the season's going to be shortened and, you know, you might not have all the leagues, and you might not have, you know, a college football playoff. It might just be your own conference that you play against. You know, why would you come back? You know, what are you going to earn? People will look at that and say, well, I don't know if this is really a title in 2020 anyway. It's kind of a weird season. Why would you come back for that? You're already going to be that. You're already the number one pick right now. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that that's the decision to make, that that's right. I'm just saying that you would think about it. Like, you'd be crazy not to judge and you know, counter both sides. It could be madness, man. I mean, I think that we're going in the right direction with everything, and I think it's going to be all right. But again, you know, we're operating in 10-minute time frames. I mean, Johnny, you know this. 30 minutes from now, there could be an outbreak, you know, in a state, and it shuts all this down, right? I mean, we have no idea what's going to even happen tomorrow, much less in August.
I mean, 2.5 hours ago, we were expecting a space launch that gets postponed.
Yeah,
so,
you're right.
I mean, you're right. Things are constantly changing. Hey, by the way, before we let you go, tell everybody again what they can expect when they go to sportsline.com.
Yeah, definitely. The NHL, you know, laid out their playoff plan for this year. We've already simulated that 10,000 times based on all the teams and injuries and players that are coming back, NBA as well. So if you're a fan of either those teams, sports, leagues, go check that out. We're also, you know, continuing to break down NFL teams with our betting guides and profiles. So go to sportsline.com, click the news feature at the top, and that part is free. Don't have to be a subscriber at all. Come check it out.
Alan, thank you as always. Have a wonderful rest of the week. We'll talk soon.
You too, my man. Thank you so much.